Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we head to Bozeman to the tattoo studio Skull & Co. for this night's pop-up experience, Scully's Supper Club. Here we join a dozen other diners to experience food created by executive chef Dave Wells, showcased with the artistry of tattoo artist Patrick Thomas. Chef Wells has been recognized by the James Beard Foundation in the category for Best Chef Mountain as a semifinalist four times and this year progressing to the shortlist as a nominee. Wells earned his culinary stripes from stints at the Rattlesnake Market and Cafe, Triple Creek Ranch, and most recent, Chico Hot Springs. Wells is now in Bozeman as the new culinary director for Jam and Revelry. In the meantime, he joins forces with Thomas to stretch his culinary muscles several times a month. Announcements of the soiree can be found on scullytattoos.com or visiting Instagram or Facebook. I first interviewed Chef Wells back in 2018 for our Holiday Flavors when Colin and Sebring Davis first took over the nostalgic property. For the Scully Supper Club pop-up, Wells brings much of what he created at Chico for the historic restaurant and tasting room. First, let's meet his partner in crime, Patrick Thomas.
This shop is called Skull & Co. My personal handle is Scully Tattoos, and that's kind of goes back before I was tattooing. I used to be a member of a combat veteran motorcycle club, and I love drawing skulls, and I always have since I was a kid. So they called me Scully as my road name, and when I left and moved on from that, it kind of stuck as a moniker. And so I ended up using that for tattooing, and I'm not very creative, so I just think of skulls all the time. Like, truly, that's it.
The skull symbol holds dualistic meanings, representing both death and immortality, along with the fear of the unknown and wisdom. Thomas's childhood may have created his fascination with this token and image.
So I grew up in Kansas. I was born in North Dakota and moved there when I was pretty young. I grew up in a fundamentalist religious cult and went to full Catholic school. I got in trouble a lot in school. They did not like artists in that school. You had to study religion, not art. So I did get caught drawing all the time.
The drawing all the time remained with him as he made changes in his life to find his way.
When I graduated, I wanted to get out. So I joined the Marine Corps, ended up in California. I was stationed in 29 Palms. 9/11 happened. I ended up deploying a handful of times. And then when I got out of that, moved back to Kansas for a brief stint, and then moved to LA to learn the tattoo.
While perfecting his craft in the City of Angels, his other passion finally brought him to Big Sky Country.
I'd been through Montana multiple times as a kid and definitely always had a place in my heart. Met some people when I was out ice climbing in Wyoming, and they were guides out here. And so came out here to ice climb with them and wanted ice climbing in my backyard. So here I am.
Here at Skull & Co., located in a mixed-use space, is Thomas's studio. So where do the ideas come from for the art he creates on the skin of his clients?
Inspiration generally comes from the clients. I had explored other art avenues, and the idea of coming up with my own base design concept for everything I was going to do was just very overwhelming. I don't feel creative in that way. But when someone comes to me with an idea or a concept, that's when I feel the most like invigorated to create. And I'm able to basically like, maybe leech their creative energy a little bit and then channel it into what hopefully is like a very unique tattoo that feels very special to them, because I view it as very much a collaboration. It's not my art going on you. It's a collaboration between us to be able to create something that we're both really, really proud of.
Thomas holds the spirit of collaboration not only in aligning with his clients and Chef Dave Wells for their pop-up dinners, but also in other ways.
I opened this space a little over a year ago. I had had a private studio prior to this, and then I had clients that I had built a lot of rapport with who had come to me asking, you know, for a potential apprenticeship. And I realized, you know, I've been tattooing almost 15 years. I was in a place to be able to help mentor other young people into this industry, and being able to like create a bigger space and create a collective and help other, especially young creative people, have a space that they feel safe to come and just be as creative as they want. Like, that's what this appeal is to me.
While I talk to Patrick Thomas, Dave Wells is working in the background. In the approximate 1,000 square foot space, a long table is already set up with dishes and glasses ready to be put in place. A large garage door is open to the outside, so the sounds of airplanes landing or taking off can be heard. A large Chinese wood lacquered screen in the corner of the room hides furniture and equipment that have been pushed aside. The walls grace paintings and photos created by different local artists. And Thomas sells this art without taking a commission. So how did the joining of creativity come about for Thomas and Wells?
So Chef Dave messaged me, I think he shot me a text almost a year ago. And it was like, I think a late evening, I want to say. And it was, hey, like, would you have any interest in collaborating like your art and my food? And it was really interesting because I immediately, like, without a second thought, absolutely.
However quickly that enthusiasm and confidence faded.
The next thought that hit my head was, I don't even know how or what or where to begin with this, what it would even look like. It seemed so foreign. Like, I love to cook, and I would say that I'm a pretty decent cook, but to take my type of creativity with his level of food, you know, being so far out of my spectrum of understanding, and combine those things, I didn't even know where to begin. All Dave, right. Helped me with that.
These days, Chef Wells wears two sleeves of tattoos that have taken about 4 years to bring to life. His passion for being in the great outdoors, hunting, running, hiking, and foraging are depicted on his arms. In the process of these creations, they have become besties.
Yeah, it's interesting. I tattooed Dave's partner, actually, when I was in LA still. And so when I moved out here, she hit me up to get another tattoo. When I was tattooing her, she said, hey, my boyfriend really likes your work and wants to get tattooed. He's a chef. And I have a history of tattooing chefs, so obviously I'm into it.
Into it meant a 4-year relationship and hours to share thoughts and creative ideas. After that fated text from Chef Wells,
we sat down over some pizza and we just started drawing up a menu of things that excited us. And that menu slimmed down a bit for the first time. Started brainstorming essentially things that inspired us about each dish.
For Thomas, this was a new and welcomed outlet for his creativity.
I think in the tattoo world, in the art world, it's extremely hard to find originality, especially with, you know, what AI is influencing. So to be able to create true originality and to be truly unique in that process is becoming harder and harder. And I think that there's an extra challenge in that. And that is what I believe Dave and I both want to bring is something so unique and so original that it's an everlasting impression on the person who got to come dine.
For Thomas, this is a new and welcome outlet for his creativity. He's also learning to gain a view of how another artist brings to life his creations.
When Dave says, I'm making a lamb dish for tonight, I don't necessarily see the lamb dish that he sees. And so getting to spend time with him, you know, I'd gone to Chico and I got to work a couple of the tasting rooms with him. And that gave me really great perspective into what he sees when he says something. I have a very broad concept of it, whereas he sees a very specific scope.
Thomas does believe that there will be a point when he will better see Chef's visions.
And so I do think that I'll be at a level where I can picture somewhere close, maybe sometime in the next year.
Pop-up dinners bring a certain vibe and anticipation. There's many elements of surprise, such as the location of the event. There's the opportunity to meet new people, and mostly there's the delight in not knowing what will be served to eat and drink. For Scully's Supper Club, there are multiple courses, 9 to be exact, for this evening's menu.
These tasting rooms are different than a normal dinner, and things have to be plated in a smaller, more intricate manner. And so when he starts to describe things, I try to picture them, and in some cases, I'm, you know, partially there, and in other cases, I'm not at all.
Tonight's dinner is the second in a series of pop-ups at Scully's Supper Club. A month ago, the duo debuted their joint endeavor.
Tonight, you know, we were able to have a little bit more time from the last two dinners to be able to really sit on a dish and talk about, you know, the evolution of it.
Evolution might mean so many things, the changing of the ingredients, or perhaps how the dish is to be executed, or how the food might appear at the table.
There's a dish that we've never done before. A week and a half ago, it was on plates, and now it is not. And it made an incredible amount of changes in about 20 minutes of him and I talking. And we plated it last night to see how it would look, and I think we were both very pleased with it.
In preparing for the arrival of diners, it's not only the menu that needs to be established, but the space needs to be organized and set up to receive guests. Since Skull and Cole is a working business by day, reshuffling of equipment and furniture is needed to create a long table for gathering and a kitchen to prepare food.
It's a solid almost two-thirds of a day to rearrange in here and have everything set up with cleaning and ventilation and everything. You know, it's part of a deep cleaning process. Essentially, like, all the stations get closed up. We clear the whole floor, do a full sweep, sanitation, and mop overall. You know, we want the area to be clean for all of our guests, but no crossover contamination from tattooing into the food. And we then relocate all of the stations and equipment over into a corner where we close it up.
Everything is neatly piled into a corner and hidden behind an Asian lacquer screen. The regular customer counter that greets clients is now the workspace for Chef Wells. The area within has all the cooking equipment to carry out this evening's meal.
Here, we use immersion circulator, induction burners, and then we have our handy little Breville oven over there, and then we have a little plancha. Part of the deal with being able to use this as a temporary food establishment is that all the food has to be prepared in a inspected kitchen. So we prepare all of it off-site.
Thomas made sure he had the permits to offer tonight's event.
I basically submit a menu and fill out a 3-page questionnaire to show that we're being clean, where we're sourcing our food, how we're storing it, and I pay a fee to file that with the health department. They usually go through it. If they have any questions, they hit me up and approve it.
While Chef Wells brings in his knowledge of food to Scully's Supper Club, he always noticed what Thomas provided during his tattoo sessions.
What I always enjoyed about going to his studio was the hospitality. He spins vinyl, he plays good music, wide range of music. He always made you feel very much at home. And so, of course, kind of the world that I live in and work in, hospitality is everything. And, you know, it's something I've recognized in him where I really admired it and his approach to what he did.
Chef Wells not only paid attention to Thomas's knack for providing the right ambience and vibe for his clients, but he also found that
he's a very inspired individual. He takes his craft very seriously and is passionate about it. He loves food and he's a really good cook. And so we just kind of became friends through that. Fast forward 3-4 years later, I think I'd maybe just gotten some other work done by him. And I was just sitting there thinking about it. I was like, is this a crazy idea? What if we did a pop-up at his studio?
The crazy idea prompted Welds to immediately reach out to Thomas.
So I just sent him a text like, hey, would you be interested in doing something together?
Wells wanted to revitalize what he was doing before and take it to the next level.
It was just an opportunity to kind of take what we were doing in the tasting room and then really try to work with someone who can kind of give it this artistic vision.
In honing his craft, Wells studies. He is the owner of cookbooks from chefs from restaurants such as the French Laundry, Noma, and Alinea. He is a hunter and forager, so understand food from the ground. He experiences what other chefs are doing.
I enjoy doing tasting menus. Either side of it I'm on, whether I'm eating it or I'm the one cooking it.
So when he is cooking and collaborating with Thomas, what goes through his mind to accomplish what he wants to put on the plate?
It goes through this filter of Patrick's, like, he has input on the dishes as well. When we first started crafting our menu, we was talking about things that he wanted to do. And we kind of run that through my filter of like, okay, well, what if we use this, this, and this? But then how it's plated and kind of what those components end up being is kind of run through, like I said, like his filter.
After all the filtering between the artists, this night's menu consists of 9 courses.
Kind of the original concept was trying to craft a menu that is representative of the area that we're in. So we have some of those things you're used to seeing, trout and of course lamb, bison, and of course beef, you know, all these things that you see on the landscape here in Montana.
The menu also features a chanterelle ravioli, duck with farro, and matsutake on Ali's homemade sourdough toast, to ending with a dessert entitled Cliché, made with winter squash cake.
we're doing a duck dish that the way that it's plated is like a landscape. And so we started talking about, okay, we know we want to do duck. What ingredients do we want to use for this? And of course, now it being fall, we had some beautiful squash from Rocky Creek down the road here. We're using some pecans, some spinach from Rocky Creek as well. We have to manipulate some of those ingredients. You'll see later on in the evening how we did it, but to kind of create this landscape that Pat wanted to put on the plate.
The landscape Thomas wanted to bring to the diners was not even on a plate. A slice of a tree oval burned with a small image of a skull, a rise with a depiction of fuzzy spike flowers or green leaves sprouting from a stone atop a gravelly ground. The spikes are made with grounded pecans toasted in duck fat, anchored with winter squash, while demi-glace forms the stems that are flanked with leaves created from fried spinach. The stone, a generous slice of duck, tops a portion of farro. Another dish for the night features one of the most iconic bounty from Montana.
For the trout, we're glazing it with a sauce that's made from molasses, fish sauce, and shiokoji. And the fish sauce we make, started making that years ago at Chico, where we just take our salmon scraps and then can use koji as the enzyme. Normally, you know, fish sauce being made of anchovies, and it's the whole fish and the enzymes that are in the fish's stomach are what ferments it, that plus, you know, with the salt. But when you just have fish scraps, you don't have that. So you add koji, and so you have that autolytic fermentation.
The second course following the trout is bison tartare with capers, quail eggs, fresh herbs, and lavash. The Armenian flatbread has been shaped in a silicon bison skull mold. That's one mold to make 14 skulls and extras for backup.
The skull starts with making some lavash, which is a Middle Eastern cracker. Very simple recipe, just olive oil and salt, water, flour.
But this is where simple ends.
So like 6 minutes in this with the beans and all of that, then I have to take it out and put it over a spoon and then let it go for another 6 minutes. So I can do like one and a half at a time, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But they take like about 12 to 15 minutes a piece. And so I didn't get them all done last night. I was up again at 6:30 this morning making lavash, and then I'm rolling it out with the pasta maker.
Just making the bare bison skull flatbread for this course takes perseverance. For 14 crackers, that's 210 minutes or 3.5 hours.
Once the cracker itself is actually crispy, I hand it over to Patrick for him to finish it, which he actually uses a wood burning kit to put the detail of the skull into the cracker. So he's basically tattooing in a sense on this, but not only is he adding detail and drawing on the cracker, he's actually adding flavor because of the Maillard reaction happening from it when he's burning it. He's actually toasting the crackers to finish them.
Thomas is putting in the final details, etching in the brown lines detailing the skull of a bison and filling the air with toasty, bready aromas. Another course that highlights the food found in Big Sky Country is venison cheek with celery root and apple kimchi.
We're doing some venison cheeks, and we kind of braise them in some like Southeast Asian inspired spices, and then serving it with like a kimchi. For our kimchi, we use apples from my apple trees, actually. Celery root from Rocky Creek Farms here in Bozeman. Of course, fish sauce that a few years old now, as well as, you know, local garlic, scallion, and of course, ginger and some Korean red chili.
Chef utilizes some shortcuts in making his final kimchi that is fresher and lighter than the traditional version.
Well, I kind of did it in two stages. I used like a kimchi base, like a base Napa cabbage. So I'm giving away my secrets here. But so I started with Napa and kind of made that. So that's a few months old. And then I take that, puree that, and then use my apples and celery root, and then I'll ferment that for a few more days.
Another opportunity to add the image of a skull comes with a ravioli course made with chanterelles, guanciale, and parmesan.
So both he and I like to forage for mushrooms. So we started talking about doing a chanterelle ravioli. And like, okay, well, like, how does this make sense for our dinner? Obviously Scully. So what about a skull? What about some sort of skull mold?
Ideas are always fine, but how did the two artists go about realizing a ravioli mold in the shape of a skull?
I molded a piece of clay into a skull shape, and then my neighbor and I, we 3D scanned it, 3D printed it into custom ravioli molds, and so the ravioli is like 100% custom mold.
The round, black-colored ravioli with the impression of a skull head is presented on a white plate with dollops of yolk and Parmesan cream and crispy slivers of guanciale.
This is a Patrick dish. It's like, what if we did like a mushroom with unagi sauce? He's very much into the sushi and stuff. I don't know if he told you, but he just cut fish for izakaya. And so basically we do like a seared matsutake with unagi sauce, some homemade sourdough, and that's pretty much a Patrick dish right there.
The matsutake course is simple yet filled with comfort and flavor. The featured backdrop is Ali Engelbrecht's homemade sourdough bread. A small, crustless, toasted, rectangular-shaped piece of bread is topped with a generous slice of the highly prized Japanese pine mushroom and finished with the soy and mirin-based sauce that normally accompanies eel sushi. With the next dish, Wells continues to keep a sense of place and time in his cooking.
We're doing a roasted saddle of lamb with some alliums and carrots from Rocky Creek. My thought behind that, and that's more of a me dish, for this I want it to be just nice, classic, clean flavors, very like comfort food kind of flavors, but maybe with a more refined technique in the way that it's prepared and plated.
The lamb is finished with a generous spoonful of demi-glace at the table. Each course is just enough, a good many bites of every dish. The Wagyu comes with a puree of potatoes and spruce jus. While an image of a spruce tree is painted on the dish, a few fresh green leaves top the dish to simulate leaves. Finally, the cliché dessert is a winter squash cake finished with winter squash namalaka, a Japanese word for super smooth, salted caramel chantilly, and sprinkling of pieces of dakwa. So now, as the last bites are taken from this meal, we go to Thomas's welcome delivered 9 dishes ago, addressing what he and Wells had hoped to accomplish for the night.
Hey, welcome everyone to Scully's Supper Club. Before you begin dining, I wanted to take a moment to thank you all for joining us on this creative journey that Dave and I began. Dave approached me last winter and pitched this idea of collaborating his food with my art. What you're going to enjoy tonight is some of those results. But as always with any art, this is an ever-growing and evolving passion. Our hope is that this tasting menu will always continue to evolve and provide a memorable experience to our guests. Please enjoy the music, art, and food.
Jonas Shannon attended the first Scully Supper Club and returned to join the festivities tonight.
Originally, Patrick explained to me that he wanted to have a lot of his art incorporated into the meal, and we saw some level of that in the first dinner, but I think that this dinner had a lot more of his artistic elements in it. Essentially, every dish had some sort of design to it. It was just cool to see a little bit more of that collaboration spelled out for you on the plate.
For Jacob Crooks, who also experienced the first dinner, he found this to be his favorite of the 9 courses.
Dish that was on the wooden oval, I think, was just so beautiful. I believe it was the duck course with the fried spinach and I want to say the squash kind of cattail fluff was one just beautiful to look at. And then like super fun to get a little bit of everything on each bite. I thought that was the course that like I believe was the prettiest, kind of the most fun.
Tyler McManus, chef and caterer, also enjoyed the duck course, but he was most impressed with
seeing how these guys work together and how the different arts melded together, and seeing the art on the plate was really cool. We don't get that in Bozeman a lot, so it was really cool to see that.
For Mila Escona of Big Sky Eats, a food content creator, she found tonight's dinner a surprising and unique experience.
I have to say, I didn't realize it'd be 9 courses, and it was just wonderful. I think the ambiance that it is, it's very different. Each dish was very thoughtful. The art that came with it, it just set the other dinners apart. So I loved what they did tonight, for sure.
Finally, we talked to Aaron Parker, the owner of Jam and Revelry, where Chef Wells will be taking on responsibilities as the culinary director. The two have definitely made a mark on the Big Sky foodscape.
So Dave and I, in 2003, moved out here from Bismarck, North Dakota. And Dave was one of the first people I worked with at Papa John's Pizza. I took over as the general manager of that store. And Dave was making pizzas with us and delivering pizzas at that time. We got to work together for, I think, about a year and a half or so.
Life took them on different paths and pursuits, but then...
we kind of ran into each other just out of chance, God, I think about a year ago, and I knew he was at Chico. We hadn't really caught up in a while, and kind of caught up about how things were going with him at Chico and things that he wanted to do in the future. One thing led to another with how he may be able to fit into what we're doing at Revelry especially, and a little bit at Jam.
So what might a diner expect at Revelry and Jam?
We're really just going to try to mold a little bit of what he's been so successful at creating out at Chico Hot Springs and bring hopefully as big a piece as we can with that into Revelry.
So for Parker, what big piece stood out tonight at Scully's Supper Club?
The ones that stuck out to me was definitely the lamb dish. I tasted some really great depths of flavors into that.
And perhaps getting an extra sampling provided him more insight.
He cut me off a little bit of piece of that loin, and you could really taste the process that he brought into that, the dry brine, the day-long, low-temperature sous vide.
Finally, the last bites of the night may also stand strong in Parker's food memories.
I think the dessert was actually incredible as well. It's so hard to bring in all the aspects of the season into anything, and I just tasted all the fall flavors, all the things you want to taste, and the type of weather, the October day we're having outside right now, so yeah.
For Chef Wells, when asked what he had hoped diners would take away tonight, the response was not immediately about this evening's food.
I hope that it's another way to represent what Pat's doing here as far as having this art collective. If you look around, he's got all these different things in here, other people's art that's for sale. And, you know, the thing that I admire about him is that he doesn't get a commission off of that. What the artist sells it for in this space is what the artist makes.
So at this Scully Supper Club, 4 times James Beard Foundation semifinalist for Best Chef Mountain, Dave Wells, had the opportunity to release his inner artist.
I hope that this is a way to bring attention to what he's doing here, and hopefully just another way for people to come and enjoy this space, enjoy the hospitality that he provides. You know, just another way for the Bozeman community to have a cool place to go and eat dinner with cool people.
Many thanks to Chef Dave Wells and Patrick Thomas for bringing art to the Big Sky foodscape. Music for Flavors Under the Big Sky has been provided by Parker Brown. Many thanks to you, listeners, for your continued support. I'm Stella Fong.